Hey, Captain Potters, guess what? In my imagination, you just said what?
What?
Yeah, exactly. Just a whole chorus. What?
What, what, what?
This is the season of Comic Cons, and there is one coming to Springfield, Missouri, which happens to be where we live. And we're thinking about going, but not only going, we're thinking about throwing our name in the hat for hosting a panel or something?
Yeah, you can basically go to these things and offer your services to talk about Star Trek. So the question is, if we were to do this, what area of Star Trek would you people like us to talk about?
And why do we want everybody else to tell us what we're going to talk about?
Because you guys have the most amazing ideas, especially when it comes to theme suggestions for Captain's Pod. And honestly, Danae and I are overwhelmed with the amount of choice.
We thought you could help us potentially narrow it down. So you can email us, ianandanae@gmail.com, with any panel ideas to get our brains a little bit more focused before we throw our name in the hat for the Missouri Comic Con.
And if you want to go to it, it's April 11th and 12th in Springfield, Missouri. We're going to be there one way or another.
So let us know your ideas and let us know if you're going to be there. ianandanae@gmail.com. The saucer section, by the way, if it doesn't get separated in the next episode, I'm going to be pissed.
Captain's Pod, Stardate 21-21-25.4. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us on our continuing voyages through the final frontier. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and I'm too excited because we're going to do the best of both worlds, ambassador.
Is this a bad time to tell you I don't want to do this show anymore?
This will be a horrible time because it will just be me talking about the best of both worlds on my own, and that would possibly be a longer show than if you were here. I'm already worried about how much I'm going to talk.
Oh, dear.
I am so excited to finally be doing the best of both worlds.
Best of both worlds.
It's not the Hannah Montana song.
It's not that one. Okay, got it.
This is episode 2 of our anniversary special season where we dig into some Picard Locutus origins. Last week we did Q Who, which was the introduction of the Borg.
Pacutus?
Pacutus? He is pretty cute. Ambassador, obviously TNG is your Star Trek from your childhood. I failed to ask you last week if you remembered anything about Q Who. Do you remember anything about Best of Both Worlds from your TNG upbringing?
I don't know what that is, Best of Both Worlds.
It's the episode title for season 3, episode 26.
Thanks, Mr. Repetitive. I don't know what the episode is what I'm saying.
Okay.
So you're like, do you remember? So if you're asking me to go back to my childhood and say, do you remember watching an episode of TNG and it impacted you so greatly that you remembered the title that aired for a split second at the beginning and never again? No, I don't.
I forget that not everybody memorizes the TNG episode titles in the same way that I do. Yeah.
No.
I did have a lot of them memorized.
That's amazing.
I could get quizzed as a kid and I would know a good amount of them.
I love that about you. I don't have that. So
no,
I
fair.
Don't know what we're about to watch.
That's
you said
great.
There's a part 1 and there's a part 2.
Yeah.
That's all I know. And I know we're talking about Picard and Locutus. I'm assuming this is whenever he becomes Borgified, but I don't know for sure.
This is the first ever Star Trek two-parter. Ever.
Has it been done again? Too
Let
many
me check.
Times.
Let me check. Well, this is great then. Let's do predictions. Other than
it's going to involve the Borg,
it's going to involve
Picard,
the Cardinal Acutus.
Right.
Yes,
we've established
Let's
early on
that.
In the series that that's a little bit too much.
Yes, I've given away some things.
Well, I think that there's going to be a little Hannah Montana that appears.
There's just not, though, is there? Because she wasn't born yet. She might have been. Don't fact check me, people.
The best of both worlds, not Hannah Montana related. The best of both worlds makes me think of two worlds. And because I know that there's Borg, perhaps it's both human and Borg, the best of them both, which would be Picard fulfilling his prophecy of becoming the Borg Jesus and freeing them all.
Freeze all of the Borg.
But we've said that I'm a little bit, I have to be, like, we have to be so careful because I know we're talking about Borg. So it feels a little bit like I'm cheating.
Yeah, that's fair.
I predict that this episode of Captain's Pod will largely be you fanboying about this episode.
Yes, that is an absolutely fair prediction.
Yep.
But with that, we'll see you in 10 Forward for a full debrief after we head to the holodeck to watch
Best of Both Worlds.
Part 1. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the Replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched. I'm fascinated. What do you want from the Replicator?
Holy shit. I really hope that your
mic
picked up the squeaky of that. Oh my God. What was the question?
What do you like from the Replicator?
I guess I need some oil for your squeaky.
Yeah, you do.
Because your chair sounds like, I don't even know what that sounds like. I mean, it has to be Earl Grey, right? Because he served that to the Admiral today.
An entire pot of Earl Grey. That's exactly what I would like.
The whole pot.
Earl Grey. I love that he holds it up so that it fits in the blocking of the camera. They're just like, you're going to have to hold it up pretty much to your chin.
Would you like some tea?
Would you like some tea? Amazing. Ambassador, take us to Jaurès IV and give us a synopsis.
The Borg be fucking around. I don't know how they have gotten to where they've gotten in the amount of time that they have gotten there, but they have.
I can tell you. Sorry, carry on.
And so we're about to encounter them once more, and the looming doom is only intensified by the arrival of a strong female presence.
Once again, the real enemy of the episode, not the Borg, it's the new woman.
Yes. But this one holds Riker's balls right in her hand, and she is squeezing them and twisting them.
Yes.
And let me just remind anyone who hasn't taken a self-defense course, it takes about 3 pounds of pressure to twist and yank balls out.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
It's information that I feel like people need to know when they're defending themselves.
100%. That's why you don't fuck around. You go for the balls in the eyes.
And in this episode, she twists and then tugs a little bit. And it's uncomfortable, but it also is interesting and entertaining to watch Riker squirm. And what's he going to do? How will he step up to the plate and lead? By killing the captain, that's how. The end.
It's the tough decision she said he couldn't make. All right, Ambassador, the expectations from me, I apologize, could not be higher. It's a huge episode. Did you, Danae, Hughes Whittington, enjoy it?
Oh, yeah.
Yes!
Entirely because of Shelby.
Now, this is fascinating to me because, honestly, this can go one way or the other with you. I had a feeling it was go in the positive column because fucking Shelby and everything she does. But I peeked over into your notes.
So,
for the Tieflingers on Patreon, Danae live writes her notes in a Discord chat as she's watching the episode. And I had a little peek. I don't usually peek, but I peeked. And it just, the only line I read was, I really like this woman.
I really like her a lot. She's absolutely going to die. Like, we're looking at an imminent death. There's no way that this woman is going to survive, right? Because you can't have somebody ram against the patriarchy and not have a demise.
How dare she? On network television, prediction, no less.
My prediction for next week, if I don't remember, will be like, down. Shelby's going to die.
So no spoilers, because obviously I know what happens.
No
spoilers. The live chat knows what happens. Please do not spoil it for anybody. And we will see how that prediction comes out next week.
I don't remember anything about this character. Like, I don't remember seeing her when I was younger. I do remember the visual of Borg Picard and how like unnerving that is.
Oh, for sure.
Truly, I did like this episode, not just because of Shelby. I was being a little sassy, but she was a highlight for me. I really enjoy them introducing a character that you will see characters that are introduced and they kind of like, pose really uncomfortable questions about Starfleet and their command, or like why they're doing things or their motive, things like that. But this was uncomfortable because she's so motivated and put in a position of power. Like, we're watching a woman go over Riker's head and not only not get in trouble for it in a way that phases her, but she also is kind of backed by the captain at a certain point in this episode. And there's just like something really fun about that. I guess I'm easy to please in that way.
She's great.
She was definitely, her character was presented very differently than the character last week, the forgettable love interest of Geordi.
Opposite end of the spectrum completely.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely some comments about her that are uncomfortable and questionable.
Which one? Which one? I mean, just when the help me to fantasize, like, about what it could be.
My younger fantasies, I think, is what he says.
Just
about
an old man's fantasy. You seem quite taken with her, JP.
Yeah, it's a...
The office, like, kind of water cooler talk was basically, have you seen the new secretary?
Yeah.
There was that vibe to it.
He looked at the curves on that car, on that hot rod.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, this is a really intense episode.
Yeah.
Has a lot of techno babble, which I know you love.
So much.
But my other favorite part about this one is really the external shots in the nebula. It's so, so pretty. Gorgeous. I don't know how much has been redone since it released, but we're going to find out.
Yep. My brain is in so many, many different places. I think what I'll start with, because everything you just said, we'll be getting into in more detail. Do you have any immediate questions or context needed, anything that's kind of like in your brain, like, that doesn't make sense, or that rings a bell, like anything that you just like kind of want clearing up about the story?
I don't think I had anything off the top of my head. I think I was asking more like rhetorical questions in my notes, but nothing that was like, who is this person or why is this done? I guess my understanding was that the Borg were very, very, very far away, and now here they are. So I guess I think I heard that they have technology beyond anything we can imagine, and that's the shenanigans for how they've arrived.
They explain it more in later appearances in TNG and a lot more in Voyager, but they basically have transwarp conduits. So that's just fancy wormholes, basically. They have a system, a hub that allows them to travel across the galaxy super duper fast. So they can cover way more speed, which I really like as a plot device for the story, because it catches them off guard so much. Like, Admiral Hansen's like, damn it, we just thought we had more time. Like, they should not have been here in just over a year. We thought we had like 3 or 4 years at the minimum. Like, by Starfleet standards, I think they should have taken 7 years to get to them, because I think Voyager's like, we can travel 10,000 or like 13,000 light years a year if we're flat out.
I guess my question would be like, why do you like this episode so much? Like, if you're going to sum it up.
Yeah, that was actually where I was going to start, because it's not just Ian either. It's the fan base really loves this episode, this two-parter as well. Part one more than part two, but TV culture respects it as well. Even if, like, if you're in TV and not into Star Trek, you probably still know about the best of both worlds. It's the tension in this episode is really like one of the main things that sets it apart. And there's such like a specific reason why this came about as well. So I wanted to like give you a bit of context to like what was happening behind the scenes. There was a good chance that Patrick Stewart wasn't coming back in season 3. Sorry, season 4. This was going to be it. He was like, his contract was up, and it was either sign on for another, I think, 5 or 6 years.
Or become Gandalf.
Become Gandalf or become Professor Xavier. So he was like, do I sign up for 6 years? And his agent was like, yeah, you can sign up for 6 years, but they'll be done in like 2 or 3. Don't worry about it. But he's kind of like, and this is some of this, like, Patrick Stewart has actually confirmed himself as well. But it was, which is why they left it open-ended. So they do the fire and they leave. It genuinely could have been Captain Picard dies in part 2. Like, that's it. They didn't have it filmed. They didn't film both of these parts together, which is 9 times out of 10 when you do 2-parters and cliffhangers today, they're filmed at the same time and they're split.
Right.
We'll notice at the beginning of episode 2, Jonathan Frakes' hair, totally different.
Well, he was very stressed. Different. He's very stressed out. So,
yeah, like, he had a haircut literally between seconds. So that was like, that's what you can genuinely have a like. Obviously I've seen this episode so many times, but when you first watch it, you can absolutely believe that Picard isn't coming back. Patrick Stewart isn't coming back. So I think so many cliffhangers now are cheap, because you know that the 9 times out of 10, you know the person is coming back. And then put that inside a show with like Star Trek that generally has pretty low stakes. Like, you don't really see characters departing. Like, Tasha Yar was a huge anomaly to have a member of the bridge crew disappear. So I think that just elevates it above a lot of other TV at the time. And 2-parters in general, not as common as they are today. Like, throughout TV, it was mainly like a soap opera thing. So serialized storytelling, having cliffhangers and 2-parters, was kind of like looked down upon as like, that's what the soap operas do. We're going to be independent stories that carry on. Star Trek wasn't the first, but TNG is one of the first to do a really punchy, dramatic cliffhanger that brought more numbers back in season four. So it really had this carryover effect of boosting TNG and making it more popular because so many people returned for season four. So other TV shows are like, oh, this cliffhanger thing really worked. So genuinely, Best of Both Worlds is a huge chunk of why we have serialized TV and two-parters in general. So I know that's hard to know in the moment and when you're watching the episode, but that's all stuff that's swimming around my head when I'm watching this.
Right. That makes sense.
There's one little other behind-the-scenes thing that I really, really love, and it's the writer of the episode, Michael Piller. He was brought on to do one season of Star Trek, just this one. He didn't plan on coming back for season four. He didn't care about the resolution. He wrote the finale and said, the next guy will deal with it, that's fine. They'll come up with something great. Until he did return and had to write the second part and the resolution to the cliffhanger. But I bring that up because Piller was also faced with a career path. Do I carry on being second string, backup, not backup writer, but like not leading the writers in Star Trek, or do I pursue my own shows and do I do my own thing? And he weaved the Riker arc into that. So,
oh, that's really interesting. So like the Riker story of this episode is essentially the writer kind of working out his own angst.
Exactly. And that's why.
And the director not realizing it, or the producers not realizing it.
Finding out way, way, way later. So, man, like, this seems really applicable to what our head writer is doing right
deja
now.
Deja vu.
This seems weird. So there's just so much genuine risk in this episode. And like the Riker subplot, this is an episode about Riker. Like, it ends up being remembered for the Borg and Locutus and all of that. But this is an episode about Riker. And that's one of the things I really love as well, is that the B plot, which is like usually, like you don't even need a B plot usually in these big episodes. But the B plot of Shelby and what Riker is going to do is so good. And it interweaves with losing Captain Picard so well. So they're my initial thoughts about why I love it so much.
It's really interesting that you say that, because as somebody who watched Star Trek, I'm like, well, there's not really a lot of tension here because I don't believe that Riker is leaving for a second. I don't believe that Picard is leaving for a second.
Of course not. No.
But you're right. In the context of the show, it's important to point out that that wasn't necessarily clear to the viewer or even the people that were making the show and how unique of a position everybody was in this moment. The sort of like waiting on bated breath to find out who was what, because Riker needs to show what kind of a captain he can be in this as he's questioning himself. So this episode gives us like this interesting idea of what Riker is going to be, what kind of a captain he's going to be. Is he going to be the kind of captain that can be fearless in the face of adversity and make terrifying decisions like killing his own captain? Or is he going to be playing things safe? And it very firmly answers that question by the end, with everyone sort of asking him to try to save Picard. And he's like, nope, let's destroy the ship. And also, is Shelby going to be his second? And to watch how the writers are like playing around with that and maybe making the audience think, is Riker going to be the new captain of the Enterprise? Is Shelby going to be the new number one?
Mm-hmm.
I can't really imagine what it would be like to come back in for the next season to see how they're going to fix it.
You can't. Like, and you can't picture the alternate history where Patrick Stewart does leave. And then what? What TNG looks like after that? I can't. It's so baffling to even think about that. Well, now that I've info dumped on you, apologies. What? Just some like behind the scenes stuff and the bits that I really love about the episode. There's so much more than I love. But let's go back to the beginning of the episode. We arrive at Jurei 4 immediately. I know you're not necessarily the music score person, but just the Enterprise in orbit above the planet. Did you get the score and like the spookiness? Because the spooky score throughout this episode is one of my favorite things.
I'm going to skip around. I'm not going to just talk about this one scene, but the music is definitely, in fact, I wrote it. Scary music is already playing. It's my first note.
Yes, it is. Immediate, like tension, immediate. Like this is a big episode. Fuck.
I love how music can influence everything. You know, like watching a scary movie to ballerina music, for example, is a totally different experience. But yeah, the mood is set really quickly. And even when Picard is talking to the Borg, it's like,
when,
like there's just this like
when the
choir that's just expressing, and then there's this boom, boom, boom. So yeah, it's got a lot of vibrancy.
It really does.
It's doing a lot of work.
I can't think of another episode that has voices singing. Like the actual choir, it's so out of left field because it's so different to like the sound of any other Star Trek episode. When he does like magnify and then bam, it's so good.
I feel like you are gonna have to like figure out how to make it through this episode because you're so happy and with, yeah. I feel like you're going to throw your neck out.
I am. It's worth it. It's absolutely fine. Okay. So back on Jurei 4, we have Tinkle Tinkle Scary Music. They beam down to the planet. And this is my biggest little nitpick of the episode.
Oh, go on.
How the fuck did you not see the scooping from orbit? Why do you have to? Ah. It's the most TV drama thing I think I've ever seen Star Trek do. Away team, like super spooky, beam down. O'Brien's like, yeah, you appear to be in the town center, sir. Can you not see the Starbucks nearby? And they're like, it's dirt.
Yeah, I wrote that. How do they not see that in the scans? It's a big crater. It looks really cool. It reminds me a bit of what happened in the last episode that we watched, where they're panning back and showing like the matte painting.
Yes, exactly.
And it's nice to see scope and scale in a TV show because it's not easy to do that. So it was fine. Do you want to know my note from this section? If anybody on the away team is chaotic evil, they can think about sledding down this thing now.
Wee! It's like, where's Lieutenant Worf? Oh, he's sledding right now.
Do you think he's chaotic evil?
The cat? Yes.
No, Lieutenant Worf.
No.
Why are you talking about the cat?
No, Worf is lawful good. Lawful good for sure. All of that. Who would be chaotic evil on the ship?
Nobody. It was just my note. Yeah, I was just thinking who in this moment would be like, wow, this entire civilization of 900 people is gone. Let's go sledding. We don't have that person on the team. But no, this really is the first time that they know for sure that it's... Well, they don't know it's for the Borg yet because it hasn't been confirmed until they do their scans the following morning. Yeah,
they have their suspicions.
The reports are similar to J-25.
They have their suspicions and immediately bring in Admiral Hansen and Shelby, who are heading up a Borg task force to... Apparently, they've been working for the last year to find a way to defend against the Borg. And this is where we're introduced to Shelby immediately. What were your immediate first impressions of her in the room? I know you've talked about how much you love her, but I always love thinking, especially when new characters are introduced in TNG, what your brain is doing. Like, okay, what's their function? Why are they here? What's going on? Because you kind of read into a lot.
When I was younger, I wasn't really thinking those things.
No,
but
of course
now
not.
I think about those things. And yeah, it makes a lot of sense because we talked about like this being a potential shift for Picard away. So they're going to be introducing some very strong people. I'm glad it's another woman. I think this is a moment where Star Trek really shines for me, that it takes some big swings, and weirdly, a big swing is putting a woman in charge. So, she feels very modern to me. Like this, she feels like an unapologetic woman in charge, and that is incredibly refreshing to see. This isn't somebody that I'm ashamed to be really rooting for. So that makes me feel really good.
I think her character has aged extremely well, and again, it's one of the reasons I love this episode, because they don't... Yeah. We would sometimes complain that they don't make it about our crew. So I feel like if Strange New Worlds did this episode, would be like, why are we introducing this new person when I want to see more of our crew?
Right.
But in TNG, maybe because we have 24, 25 episode seasons, it gets more of a pass. But it is bold to spend so much time with Shelby in a big cliffhanger episode.
Amazing. Yeah. It feels really nice and refreshing. Like you said, for it to age this well after all this time, and what the Admiral says about her is uncomfortable. Old man fantasies, essentially. Keep your eye on her. She's one very impressive young lady. I loved that, though. I don't like calling young lady, I think woman, or call her, was it, she's a colonel or corporal or
She's lieutenant. Capricorn. She's lieutenant commander.
So commander, that's what they're saying. Like, I think it would be nice just to rank it. It's one of those things where, okay, this is something that I hone in conversations. If I find out that a woman is a doctor, I like to call them doctor.
Yes.
Because I often, like, there's just, when there's an earning of a title, there's also this sort of calling her young lady seems to be knocking her down a peg. But I think they're also talking to a generation of viewers who misses that sort of banter about a woman's place in relationship, or a woman's place at home, or a woman's place in general being just as a lower sort of vibe.
Yeah. It's the most TOS conversation like of the episode. I could imagine like Kirk and McCoy talking about, oh, that yeoman's an up-and-coming star, isn't she? Mm-hmm. Once they've had a bit of a chat about the Borg and that they thought they would have more lead time, they depart. Riker tells Shelby about the poker game that's coming. But Hansen then explains to Picard that Shelby would make a great candidate for the first officer position. And Picard hasn't been told that Riker is leaving. What do you feel about the Riker subplot? And like kind of the heart of it is him processing whether he's too comfortable on the Enterprise, what his career move should be, like ignoring the fact that we're in a TV show and he has to stay because that's what he's cast as. Like the real world problems of picking a job and picking a new career and a new progression.
I mean, listen, if you know you're an awesome first officer and you don't want to advance, don't advance. I think the point that the Admiral is trying to make is that there's a lot of young cadets coming up who have a lot of gusto who will outpace him when Starfleet could use someone like Riker who has experience and would make a great captain. And sometimes people see things in you and they want you to try something before you're ready. But Riker steps up to the plate as a captain at several points, you know, when Picard isn't available for whatever reason. And I think he's always kind of been impressive. And I like the conversation he had with Deanna about that.
I love that scene so, so much. It's one of the best written Deanna scenes, I think, that we have in the series. Like she asks some like really great questions and just, well, how does she say it? Yeah, I suppose like that's the question you have to ask yourself. What do you want, Will Riker? And it's the way that she delivers that Will Riker at the very end.
They love each other.
It seems to have, it's that, but it seems to have professionalism and love at the same time.
Of course, yeah. That's one of my favorite things about them.
It's so great. And she calls him out as well. He's just like, maybe I'm too comfortable. And she's like, I don't even know what you mean by that. Like, you're just talking shit. Like, what are you actually saying right now?
Well, that's the part that I kind of, like, maybe we should just touch on too, is that I've talked to many people over many years, and there are some that will advance when the opportunity arises, and they will rise to the occasion when someone says, I think you would do great at this, even though it's outside of your comfort zone, and you rise to meet that. And there is something called outpacing yourself or growing beyond what you really want to do. And you sometimes don't realize it until you take that next job and you're like, man, I really miss what I was doing before, even though it's less pay, even though it doesn't have the same benefits as being in charge in this way. I miss that life. Like there are times that I have said, I wish I could just go back to fast food. Like there was something about working at Taco Bell, which was my first job, that I really enjoyed. I clocked in, I clocked out, and I smelled like beans. Who doesn't want that?
Me.
The point is that sometimes you realize you've outpaced your desires and outpaced what you really want for your career, and that's okay. So I like that he also, in the scene with Deanna or even with Picard, he's still holding his own, saying, I don't know if that's what I want. Like, I like what I am doing. And questioning that and working up against that, being stretched, is okay. But at the end of the day, that's his choice. And I don't think that I look down on Riker for not having taken a ship before now.
And it's confusing for him as well, because like it's so great. Like it's a great bit of direction when he says, I sacrificed a lot.
Yeah.
And points to Deanna, like specifically, because the reason they broke up is because he was offered I think he was offered first officer on a different ship or lieutenant on a different ship. And he was supposed to meet with her and had to immediately depart for this mission, and he chose the ship over Deanna and basically stood her up.
Like, ugh.
It was, and when they reunite in Encounter at Farpoint, the first episode of TNG, that's the first time they've seen each other since then. So he literally sacrificed Deanna for this career path. And now he's like, wait, what am I doing staying still? Like he didn't expect to find himself being this comfortable on the Enterprise.
The other thing that I like about the scene at the beginning where we are learning that Riker has had this option is that I kind of think it's a little bit rare to have our experience of watching this show through the eyes of Picard. Because usually as the viewer, we're like the Wesley or we're the Shelby or we're, you know, the alien species that's on the ship discovering things together. Or we're like, we're not usually in finding something out when Picard finds it out and can kind of find ourselves relating to Picard. So what an interesting thing for the writers to do. And I think it's a really clever thing to do.
And it was well acted as well. Like when Hanson tells him, he stops in his tracks. I'm sure he'll do great.
And I think he respects, I think he respects Will's decision making and the reasons why.
Not until he pulls him into his ready room and is like, rethink it.
Well, I think that he knows that, I feel like what Picard is doing is making sure that there's nothing that he could say that would end up showing that he was trying to hold him back. Like for Picard to accept Riker passing up a captain's chair, Picard needs to know that he said everything he needed to say to try to encourage him. Just in case he's
waiting for permission.
Yeah.
Because he's too proud to come and ask for it himself.
It's kind of like kicking the baby bird out of the nest, but if the bird doesn't want to leave and is an amazing addition to, the environment, of course Picard wants to have Riker, by his side.
Because the argument that Riker comes up with is, you need me, Captain. Like, you need me right here on the Enterprise. And Picard's basically like, that's bullshit. Like, cool, I would love to have you here, but the Enterprise will do just fine without you. What Starfleet needs is good captains. Like, if you're a good first officer, I think you'll make a great captain. Yeah. That is what we need, another captain at a ship right now.
I also think that this episode does something very interesting overlaid with the doom of the Borg, which is there's a little bit of that office politic thing going on. When Shelby is talking so boldly to Riker about taking his job, she's doing it thinking that it's like, you're going to get this ship. I'm here for your job. Like, let's work together. I'm a great fit for you. Like, she wants to impress Riker so she can take over his position. And she wants to show that she's got what it takes to ride alongside with Picard. But instead, it ends up being a shock to him because he didn't realize that anybody would know that he was offered this ship. And this is where the office politics kinds of plays in, where through the grapevine, she's heard some information, blah, 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 blah. And then probably it comes back Hanson, to him, Because
Hanson is, I'm not going to say grooming her. Hanson is apprenticing her. So if he had the information, obviously, about Riker, he's going to talk to her and say, hey, Shelby, heads up, we're going to the Enterprise. You'd make a great first officer. Like, I think he wants his protege in the position as well. So I guarantee he fed her the information.
Chat's also reminding that the Starfleet needs good captains now. And that's what Picard says. Yeah. And it is an interesting thing to think about. Like, you're right on the verge of this Borg war. So of course, Picard's also like, man, I would trust you in this position and Starfleet would trust you in this position. Yeah. So it's interesting to think about it from a point of like you said, these are fictional characters. This is his job. This is a TV show.
Yeah.
I want Riker and Picard to stay together forever, just like I want Riker and Deanna to stay together forever. And spoiler alert for those who haven't watched Picard, there's some really fun stuff and you should at least watch season 3 anyway.
Really watch season 3 or season 1, episode 6, Nepenthe is what you should do.
But it's really interesting to kind of go, you know what? Picard's not wrong. Riker would make a great captain and go out there and help Starfleet. It is a little selfish maybe for him to put himself in front of the needs of his entire fleet,
Many, would you say?
I would say that. So, I think it was a really interesting kind of tension part on top of the tension of the Borg. Yes. There's the tension of Riker and a will he, won't he? And then he's forced into a position of authority and he declines it in a way by trying to go on an away mission right away and has to be talked down from that and accept his power as a captain. So it's a really...
Oh man, that at the end is great.
The movement of Riker through this episode, you said it was a Riker episode. Yeah.
He has an arc in this episode.
We talk a lot about where does this episode fit into? What would you introduce someone to? Definitely Borg, definitely Picard, and definitely Riker. Yeah. Also, this should firmly be in the Beverly Saves the Day category.
But only if we look at it from a mosquito's point of view.
That's correct.
back onto the office politics thing, I really, really love that point because it has one of my all-time favorite exchanges in all of Star Trek. And I think it's the only time I see Riker and Jonathan Frakes acting like this. It's when they're holding up the turbo lift on the bridge. Just close the turbo lift doors, hold. We'll just block anybody from using this turbo lift at all. And just all of the dialogue in that scene is on fire. It's just after.
Oh, it's so heated, isn't it?
It's just after she's gone to Picard with the separate the saucer section plan that Riker has turned down. Mm-hmm. Great bit of camera work when we go into the ready room and Riker comes through the door. Camera pans right to then reveal that Shelby has already beaten him to it. But just like Riker saying, you do another end run around me and I'll snap you back so hard you'll think you're a first year cadet. Like, he is so rarely that shitty with somebody, and like, he is pissed. And like,
he's pissed so many times in this episode.
So mad. And is he pissed like because of his pride? There's a little bit of it where I'm like, I think he's pissed because he's so protective of his captain as well. Like, my job is to protect the captain who has the hardest job on the ship from these menial meetings. And like, this is something I get to choose what goes to the captain, and Shelby decides that she knows better. And of course that leads to her saying, you're in my way.
Mm-hmm.
And Riker's just like, how terrible for you, with that shit-eating grin.
Yeah.
Oh, was that juicy for you?
I mean, clearly they don't have an HR department, because
clearly.
Whenever he threatens her, she could have just been like, well, I guess I'll talk to HR about that. And I don't know. I don't get the impression that Shelby is like that. She's like ready to go toe-to-toe. And that's one of the reasons I really like her character, is that she's not like, I think she's nervous to go toe-to-toe with Riker. And she kind of shows that a little bit in some of the scenes. She's corrected by Riker many times in this episode.
Oh my God.
When they go down to the surface, and she had gone down early in engineering when she says she can stay up with Data and work extra at the saucer section part in the lift. She challenges him on the bridge. Did you notice that Captain Picard also had to push her out of the way at one point in time? Like, Shelby is there to make an impression.
She
and
is
working
front she with is Data front. And then does this shy little like meek smile when Picard like kind of nudges
like,
her out of the way.
Can I have
my bridge back?
Yeah.
Is that
she's
okay?
Like, well, but she says something. She says, someone like you sits in the shadow of a great man for too long or for so long. Like, she's really pushing Riker to get out of his position to make room for her. But also the show is kind of pressing that idea. Like, are you just riding Picard's coattails because you don't want to make the hard decisions? And it is hard to watch anybody like take a dig at Riker, because of course we like Riker, but honestly his character has clearly developed quite a lot at this point. This is season 3. He is more careful and cautious, and you know, less I don't know, wild, I suppose. He doesn't even try to come on to Shelby when he takes her to the room.
He doesn't try it once.
And she doesn't either, which was great. And I was like, oh, here we go. And then he says back to her after she kind of insults staying in his shadow. He's like, you bet with this crew that I play it safe.
Yeah, you bet your ass I play it safe.
And then she says, if you can't make big moves, make room for someone who can. And I don't disagree. Like, shine on, girl. Go be first officer on some ship. Go be a captain someday.
Yeah,
like, that's okay.
That was my question. Like, in that moment, who do you come find yourself relating to more, coming down on which side? Because like, I've evolved. Obviously, I was Riker, Team Riker, all the way. Get the fuck out of here, Shelby. But as I've grown, I'm like, I see both sides. I see what you're saying, Shelby.
Here's the thing. Shelby's character is introduced as like the closest to Borg knowledgeable Starfleet that they have.
Yeah, she has a power in this episode.
She is adamant that they have to work hard and fast because they're up against it. And the episode skips over that moment when she's proven right because the Borg appear quickly. Like, she's on the ship to talk about stuff. She recognized this magnetic kind of thing going on in the ship's hull that they looked at. That's also on the soil down on the surface. So she knows for sure it's the Borg before anybody else does.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one that has a lot of ideas. She gives Data the idea to change up how they're firing on the Borg ship to take them out of this.
I love it. Again, like, it's such sharp writing in the moment as well.
She is powerful and focused.
Yeah.
And I don't really blame her for being dominant. It's just, you know, you hope that, I don't know, when you're in a military operation, which Starfleet technically is.
Yeah, 100%.
You're going to have somebody that's in command and serious. And I kind of respect it. I respect that she's okay with saying the hard things, and she's not wrong. If The saucer section, by the way, if it doesn't get separated in the next episode, I'm going to be pissed. Because she's got great ideas and they're fun and she's right. Like, there are moments when we've all been in some organizational chart where we can't, we are not the head of the operation, whether it was when we were in school or something.
Yeah.
And you know you've got a great idea and it needs to be considered. You tell the person you're supposed to, and you know it's probably not going to be told quickly enough or taken seriously enough. And so you just want the balls to go above them and say something. Yeah. And Shelby shows us what that can feel like. And Picard didn't put her in a place, you know?
No, he's like, great plan, premature, but let's do it.
So they both have points, yeah.
Someone in the chat has mentioned that she doesn't necessarily follow the chain of command.
No. But
I think there's an element here where she is, because I had a long, 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 long career in retail before doing this. And whenever I was like going for a promotion, it's not bullshit, but it is bullshit because you're getting underpaid, is do the job you want to do before you're doing it. So in her mind, she is following the chain of command because she is number one. She is the first officer on the Enterprise. She's bringing her idea to Picard as if she was already in the job.
Is she also meant to be the first officer with the Admiral as well?
No, because she's working at Starfleet Intelligence. So she's not on a ship right now. She's a lieutenant commander. She's not even the same rank as Riker right now. She is technically a rank below him. But yeah, she's just like, I'm commander. I'm doing it. Like, you live the life that you want to live. Like, you want to be Batman? You go to work dressed as Batman every day and maybe you'll become Batman. So that's the attitude I kind of get from her. And honestly, I love her. I respect the heck out of it. And I think it is the wake-up call
that
Riker wants, even though it's uncomfortable.
It is. I'm also like, when we're talking about her chain of command, I did feel that a couple times, like, wow, you're out of line. But when I look at like the moment, for example, when she starts telling Data what to do.
Yes.
Is Data supposed to be reporting to somebody else? Because, like, does she have the authority to instruct somebody what to do? It worked, and she's right.
That should have really gone through Picard Riker. And Data probably should have looked over his shoulder at Picard and been
permission.
Like, should I do this? But in my brain, I'm like, in the moment, I mean, obviously it's a TV thing because she is like whipping that order out so fast. And like, it's not from across the bridge. It's almost like whispering to Data, like, I will press the buttons if you need me to, machine man, but you do this right now because I know it's going to work.
So, but we also are established that, you know, as Riker has said and the Admiral has said, I think at the very beginning, he even said, like, I give her a wide berth. Like, I give her
wide latitude,
a lot of grace because she gets it done. And so, I don't know. I kind of have a lot of forgiveness for the character. And we'll see what she does in this next. She is in command of the Enterprise. So, it's wild to see a character appear for the first time at the beginning of an episode. And by the end of the episode, they're in the captain's chair. So, that's a really... No, she's not in the captain's chair. She nearly was.
Yeah, she was this close to being in command.
Like, but he trusts her. That's the cool thing, too. He gave it to her.
He trusts Deanna.
So crazy.
He trusts Deanna. That is one of the most perfectly placed Deanna moments. She might be the only person on the ship
that
can tell him that and that he respects. And I'm like, kudos to the writers for giving that to Deanna and giving Riker the quote unquote balls to actually make the right decision. But that's another thing I love about that complete arc for Riker in this episode is that Shelby says, if you can't make the big decision, step aside and make room for somebody who can.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of the episode, he is making the hard decisions.
Yeah.
She's the one that says, we risk it all. We go back and we rescue Picard and we do the hero thing. He's making the hard decision of saying, no, kill him. Done.
Ugh.
Like, blow him up. It's kill Captain so Picard. It's so uncomfortable.
It's great
and it's
TV.
Earned and it's great TV.
Oh, it's great TV.
Fire. It doesn't matter what the conclusion is. Because Riker doesn't know that he's in a TV show. It's great that he's just like, Lacutus gives the speech and he's like, my response, Mr. Worf, fire. Like, that's the answer.
I mean, can we talk? When are we going to talk about
Picard? Let's get to the board. Let's do it. Let's get to the board.
I'm fucking ready for
this. Let's fucking go. There's a lot of cat and mouse with the Borg. Admiral Hansen has said that the Lalu, which I want to know more about the Lalu.
What is it?
The USS, it's L-A-L-O.
Okay.
I've always in my life heard it as the USS Lulu, but the sub said it was Lalo. Oh, yes.
This is the ship that departed and sends a distress signal at the starbase.
Yes.
And then they go...
Is never heard from again.
Never heard from again.
The Enterprise is the only ship in range, cliche. 6 days. How is everybody 6 days away? I didn't realize how much in deep space the Enterprise was, but apparently they really, really are.
Fucking Q.
Just fuck you, Q. They have engaged the Borg. We do the cat and mouse, and we get to the nebula. They have
we're not going to talk about the Borg. We're going to talk about the nebula. We should. Let's quickly go to the nebula. Let's do it.
We get into, we're going to detour a little bit because I do want to talk about really quickly the phaser fire with the Borg.
We should. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We'll talk about the fight. We'll talk about the nebula. We'll eventually get to the important thing,
which is Picard. The random settings keep them changing. Don't give them time to adapt. I don't know if anything in Star Trek, and I'm such a dork because I love it so much. I don't know if any phaser fire has ever topped the phaser fire in that scene. The pew, 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 pew. The noise, the definition of rent-free in my head. I can syllable by semitone, whatever, match that phaser fire as it's happening. And did you notice, Danae? I know you noticed because you love watching this stuff as well. The colors of the phaser beam changed. Because, no, don't you laugh at me. You saw it too.
I'm not laughing at you. I'm enjoying your emphaticness.
It's not just rapidly firing phasers. It changes colors. It goes orange. It goes blue. It's white and blue. As the frequency changes, the color of the phaser beam changes as well. It's so good. And then pam, 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 pam. The tractor beam explodes. It's just, it's the tiniest little touch. And it's so important. And when every phaser beam costs so much money, Danae, you could get away with it, but they don't. They decide to spend trillions of dollars on phaser beams just to get it blue, just to match the frequency change. That's it. TED Talk over. I'm good now. I'm not good. I'm going to carry on.
You okay?
Because
you're right.
Get us out of here. Turn around. Warp 9. Engage. The Enterprise flies into the Borg ship because the perspective is so wonky. That ship is so huge. The Enterprise can fly right at it, and it doesn't make a difference. It still has time to do its arc. I love the sense of scale on the Borg ship. And then, yes, they get chased into the nebula. Something that stood out for me last week is how much you loved the Borg ship chasing the Enterprise and how scary that was. Was it scarier in this episode? Just as scary? For me, this episode is scarier when that cube is chasing the Enterprise down.
There's a really great shot where the Enterprise is in the foreground and then the Borg cube is behind the Enterprise, filling up the entire screen.
Yes.
It's beautiful. Bam. And it does help the feeling of doom and gloom. I keep saying the word doom.
It's a doomy episode. It's a really doomy episode.
It is. And what we're kind of missing maybe a little bit last time and last episode with the Q-Who, we're getting it all here because we kind of wanted to have more bang for the buck on the attack. And here we kind of like, it's full on and it's fun. And it's also nice because they repeat a little bit of what the Borg does. They're going to do a probe of your shields and they're going to figure out and then they're going to do their tractor beam, which actually is disabling your shield. So if you've watched QQ in recent history, you're like, yep, here we go again. Yeah, you know,
this is it. What I love is that Picard says the Borg are like, you can't, your weapons again, are irrelevant. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Picard says, we have new shields. We have
great,
new weapons.
Great job, Picard.
And immediately the Borg like just scan them to like call bullshit. It's like, fine, we'll probe you again. Mm-hmm. And we're going to find out exactly how advanced you are. And find out that they're not.
Yeah. And then we go into, you know, more firing. So yeah, all of the battles were really, really fun.
Did you enjoy them? Because you do like the space battle.
I do. I did like the space battle. And I really love the look of the nebula. And I thought it was really
beautiful.
Let's
talk about the nebula, Danae.
Okay.
Do you know why this nebula is special? There's no reason for you to know why this nebula is special as I cuddle my microphone.
Oh, is it because it was reused shots for
you
the Wrath of Khan?
You son of a bitch. You Googled it. No. Oh, no, you didn't. The live show gave it away. Here we go. Okay.
I'm sounding so smart. Thank you, Rima. I love the idea of reusing things because you have a budget. And sometimes it's like we'll see the reuse of things like outfits that they do for when they go into the...
Some of them still have the season 2 uniforms.
I was talking more about when they go into the happy fun time place of imagination. Holodeck? Yep. And yeah. then they're wearing clothes from like a Western because...
Oh, clearly that was in the lot.
They're sharing the same yes. lot, you know, things like that. Those are kind of fun to see, but when you get to reuse a shot, it's so, so important. This is actually how we have some of the same movements in some of the old Disney films
yes.
is that they had the hand drawn and then they hand draw over that again for, I think it was like a dancing, I think one of the dancing characters in Robin Hood was the same dance from maybe like Cinderella or something
like
that.
It's like step for step.
Yeah, exactly.
The same dance. Yeah, just
and it makes
save
sense.
Some work.
I mean, it's clever. It's an important way of using the entire buffalo in media,
yes.
so to speak. And if it's saving money so that we can have more phaser fire, I am all for it. It's beautiful.
Yes.
I loved it. It looked really nice.
Let's go. No, I completely agree with all of those points. And this works. This has like so many facets to it for me because this is also an Easter egg for all intents and purposes. This is a bit of fan service as well because the Wrath of Khan at this point is the pinnacle of Star Trek media. It is like the ending, some people disagreed with, but it is an incredible movie that almost like all Star Trek fans adore. So the nebula where there is a game of cat and mouse that happens at the end of The Wrath of Khan, that happens in this nebula with the Enterprise. To reuse that, it's not a random nebula that they used in like season 3, episode 1 that's just like forgotten about. This is an important nebula and they turned it upside down, Danae. They just turned the image upside down and they changed some of the colors.
Love that.
They used most of it the same. And it's just that people that had recently seen The Wrath of Khan, because I think it was like, don't know what the time gap is, probably 10 years, something like that, 10 or 12 years. But I wonder if anybody at the time would have noticed it, but it's also a nice nod. It doesn't feel completely cost-saving for me. I'm sure that's a huge part of it. But it's also like just a nod to this iconic nebula. And honestly, it could be the same nebula. I mean, it's not, but they could have like maybe found a way to like make it literally the same nebula. But no, I really like that touch. And it's the same cat and mouse as well. Like it is the Enterprise hiding from a very dangerous enemy.
Yeah, I mean, nebulas are great. They provide you to have a lot of fun and great screenshots as well.
Yeah, absolutely. My dad had a time computer and every time it booted up, this blew his mind, instead of doing like the Windows boot up sound, he changed it to be the Enterprise remains concealed in the dust cloud.
Mm.
And the desktop background was the Enterprise in the nebula hiding from the Borg. So that is probably the first ever line of Star Trek that I was able to quote, the Enterprise remains concealed in the dust cloud, because I heard it every day when the computer booted up. Let's talk about Picard and Locutus Ambassador. This kicks off with, we have engaged the Borg, and Worf says, they are hailing you specifically, sir. Big immediate game change, because we assume that the Borg are after technology, but they specifically want Picard.
Ooh, I forgot this. I wasn't prepared for that. So I wasn't remembering like how he becomes Borg. I could not remember. I remember him becoming Borg, but not like the how. And so when they wanted him specifically, I was like, okay, then he needs to get over to the ship somehow and stay alive and not be like in trouble, die, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I forgot the reason why, and it makes sense that they would want it. I think my notes was like, sucks to be somebody who has a great voice, I guess, because they want him specifically because they know they're about to go take over Earth and they want to have a humanoid voice and a human like looking Borg member that maybe has fewer face and body fuckery to... guide them into assimilation. And well, I mean, but it makes sense as well. You know,
yeah.
It makes sense.
It's a really practical thing because it's like, we clearly aren't you're not reacting well to us. I mean, I don't know who reacts well to the Borg, but yeah, to facilitate your smooth transition, like they think it's just a way that they're going to adapt. It's like, maybe if we use one of your people, it's going to make this a lot easier. And of course, Locutus in Latin means the one who speaks.
Oh.
Love that. Always love that about the name Locutus.
What I didn't remember, and I think the most important part of this, is that when he is kidnapped and taken to the Borg ship, he's taken in and The Borg collective is like, you lead the strongest ship of your fleet. You're going to be the, you speak for your people. And he says, I have nothing to say to you. And then something like, we will resist with every last ounce of our strength.
No, I will resist with every ounce of strength I have in my body. Yeah.
So he is the reason that the Borg say resistance is futile, because, and that becomes the thing. Like,
yes.
It is because of Picard's beautiful way of speaking that they assimilate his style of speaking, and then that becomes what we know.
Resistance is futile came from Picard.
It's kind
that's
of
what
like
I love.
It's kind of like when you hear a song that's like a cover song and you don't know who the original was or something.
That's
and you're
what
like,
it is. It's
and like
so good.
I thought that the Borg was the original, but really it was actually Picard giving it to them. And
that's why they don't turn
so
up
cool.
in Q Who saying resistance and futile.
Did you remember that?
Yeah, no, I did. I can't. There's no way I'm going to spoil that and like preempt you, because having the revelation of where resistance is futile comes from is not something that everyone's going to get, because not everybody knows the Borg before watching The Best of Both Worlds. So you're in a unique position where you can know about the Borg having not seen their biggest episodes. So yeah, resistance and futile comes from the amount that Picard proclaims that he's going to resist. And he is like, he is so impassioned. And knowing that his resistance is futile is so crushing. Like it is the beginning of a really dark journey for Picard. There is everything before this and then everything after he's assimilated.
Yeah, and I remember some of the episodes where he's really struggling with who he is and, you know, kind of like Seven of Nine in a way. You know, they're just, you're a different person after something like this. So there's the Picard before and then there's the Picard after. And the sad thing is we don't really get to have much of like the Picard that we know in this episode.
No,
you know,
a lot
it's
of
sort
it.
Of like what we know about him exists in the three seasons previous that we love. And then like, he's just kind of like zipped out, and it just reminds you how like scary space is. You know, people don't leave your house.
You don't leave your house and don't go into space.
Yeah.
It would have been a really weird goodbye to Patrick Stewart.
It would have been a really disservice to him.
Yeah. I think that the more I think about it, the more I'm like, I don't know how Picard leave, because
like this seems like a writer was angry or something, because this is a terrible way to say goodbye to
maybe
captain.
They were pissed at Patrick Stewart for thinking about leaving.
I don't know,
because season three is an incredible season of Star Trek as well. There are some like top tier episodes, so we really, it's not like we just had Patrick Stewart in season one and two where they were still finding their way. Season three they'd really found a stride. We get another like really dark element of the Borg as well, which is they explain your culture will adapt to service us. And Picard just saying, look, we're individuals. We would rather die than be slaves. Death is irrelevant. Oh, we won't let you die. Like, that's not an option for you people. I'm sorry. Like, death doesn't serve us a function. It's going to be worse than death. Oh, and the dispassionate, you would think that like a villain that's dispassionate and isn't angry, doesn't show any emotion would be boring. The Borg are terrifying because they don't
have
emotion.
Are.
They're
they don't
dispassionate.
Care.
They're a computer virus that you can't control and you can't reason with.
It's an angry chat GPT.
Angry chat GPT.
With like mobility.
with mobility. Very minimal mobility.
I mean, yeah, I guess.
Can you imagine if the Borg could run? It'd be fucking terrifying. Borg sprint.
I guess they don't really run, do they?
They're more like zombies. Like,
yeah,
they're
that
really
makes
the
sense.
Zombies of Star Trek.
They had to like bring them down a little bit or they'd be way too OP.
Yeah, exactly. This rapidly leads into some guidance.
Let's talk about that, because this is a good scene again.
I get one of the best written scenes in the episode, even though
they're all really good.
I love this, the calmness of Ten Forward. And what did you get from this scene that you loved?
Well, another moment whenever I'm just like, man, these two have known each other for so long, because I know that they've met so long ago, and there's a real beauty to how this show allows two actors to just have a paused moment where they look at each other.
Yeah.
And then you get to read into what that look means. So interestingly, this look might mean something different before we watch Picard. Right? But then after you watch Picard and you kind of like get more history of these two and you're watching them, like they remember each other. They go back. Like there's just something deep there.
She's the only one he can be this vulnerable with. He can't have this talk with Riker, like, because he's, like, he says, like, we may yet prevail. Like, it's a conceit, but it's a healthy one. And but he just gets to, he's taking a tour of the ship before a hopeless battle. And then, like, hey, no, the Battle of Trafalgar was won. Yeah, but Nelson didn't come back from that one. The foreshadowing, Danae. Nelson didn't come back from Trafalgar. Oh, does she know? Danae, does she know?
Of course she knows.
Can she smell the timeline?
Of course she knows.
Is she licking the timeline and seeing what happens?
Tastes like imminent defeat and a little bit of, I don't know, DNA doom.
But it's great. And it's such a, like, it's such a pacing shift as well. You have the drama of, like, the phaser fire and the hopelessness and then running into the nebula. And then this calm, literally calm before the storm, where he gets to ground into Guinan. And she basically says, like, hey, if the worst happens, as long as there's six of you left. And I'm like, I don't take any comfort from that. But the line delivery through Guinan is, from Whoopi Goldberg, is incredible. Like, my people survived, as will humanity survive. Like, there's a musicalness to how she delivers all of those lines. And they're miserable lines as well. Because, like, you just need a handful of you to continue the dream. But for me, I'm like, then we lost. Like, if there's only a handful of us left, the worst has happened. And it's still finding the optimism in that moment. And it just adds so much depth to the Borg. Like, the amount of times sci-fi stuff faces with end of the universe, end of the galaxy stuff, this is one of the few episodes where I really feel it. Like, I feel the hopelessness of facing the Borg.
Yeah. You have to have some hope in an episode like this. And I think it's really important to bring Guinan back into it, given what happened in Q-Who and her knowledge that something is imminent. So, a beautiful moment. It was brief. You know, last time we had a lot of activity with Guinan where she was really confident.
Did you miss her this episode?
Oh, of course I miss her. But like you said, this is really Riker's episode. This is really where he needs to be kind of more of the mix. And we're introduced to Shelby, and she needs to be in the mix as well.
Yeah, she does.
It would have been really weird if Shelby had gone to 10 forward and done like the little claw hand thing from last episode. And yeah, find out that she's actually Q that's given up her powers so that she can actually be on the ship. Or it's Q in disguise and he's like, finally, I've made it.
Oh God, that would have been hideous. That would have changed this episode entirely.
But yeah, look, the cutest thing, I think, to kind of go back to what happens to Picard on this episode, like, so he's knowing that they're in a precarious situation. He's really just planning on trying to distract the Borg long enough so that it can't do damage to other people before help arrives. It just feels very hopeless. And then he's actually taken and he is assimilated. And when the away team is on the ship and they're kind of like going around in these different sets or whatever, and we don't really see Captain Picard, that he's not in the baby bay. It's just his clothes. And she's kind of like, okay, where is Picard? Like, we can't find him or whatever. And then you just see him from side profile.
Oh my God.
What a fantastic way to shoot that. And it had to have been the plan from the beginning. Somebody drew this and they were brilliant. Like, he just slowly turns to camera, laser directly into the camera's eye. And we're just like, what the fuck are we seeing right now?
It's crazy.
You know, this man was tortured and assimilated and he is no longer the Picard that we knew. And it should be mourned. And I can't imagine, like, the feeling of dread after this episode ends has to have been pretty devastating for anybody who loved this character, because we see him as Picard in the future. We know he's going to be okay, but he's actually never really the same after this.
It's wild.
Yeah. And so it's like, you're watching him and you're like, that's not Picard anymore. You know, he's never going to be himself, but he's certainly not in there right now. Or is he like in there kind of fighting? We had an interesting kind of experience in Picard with Agnes becoming the Borg. And I remember like, the idea that you could kind of like hear her thoughts, like she's in there kind of trying to like in like a sort of separate part of herself, and
she's kind of sharing space
in
with the
collective
queen.
But like still her. And so I kind of imagine this as a similar thing, that he's just recently been assimilated, so he's still maybe strongly himself, and the Borg is potentially intending to keep him as human as possible so that they have that speaker for the people.
Because the Borg don't speak as a rule. Like, we don't hear them speak. They speak as one voice. So there's no individuals choosing to talk.
But it is now.
But
now,
it is now with Locutus. Yeah,
because he's kind of like, so far the Borg have been this non-corporeal audio disembodied presence. There's just this, there's a voice coming from the attic or whatever.
Yes.
But now Picard is the speaker, and it is very unnerving because there is now a Borg that represents the whole rather than the drone.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even see in the way that they stack the Borg around him as if he is their leader.
Yes.
He also just looks badass. He looks so badass.
The design is incredible. Ugh. They didn't go over the top. They didn't like mangle him.
No, he's just in this sort of like dark shirt. And then it has, you know, the
six pack,
the ab six pack thing going on, you know.
I do not know why.
Because it looks badass because of that. Incredible. It's just like what you would see in a superhero costume these days, where the six pack is included in the Superman like zip on. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Uh-huh.
Where, or when you touch it, the muscles just sort of bend and bow because it's actually just the foam from the costume. It's
inflated.
But in this case, it's really just that panel on the front that looks really like oh. But I will believe that Lacutus is ripped. That's totally fine.
It is heartbreaking the more you watch it, because like you just see this, like, it's too late, it's happened, like they've taken him, they've put machinery on his face, like that's in there, like he's had modifications made to him
already.
Like he has been tortured already, like it's too late. Like just seeing the uniform in the drawer is so heartbreaking because that says so much. Like they have stripped him for some reason. Like, there's no good reason for him to have lost his uniform and for it to be where the baby cubbies usually were. So it's such a shocking moment. And there's in-universe, there's no reason for that side profile turn.
It's so good.
But it's so flipping dramatic.
It's got like a hope. There's a hope to it.
Yes.
There's
like, Captain. There he is. We've got him. Oh
shit.
Shit.
Yeah.
And Beverly has the
she's
most,
the one that sees him. She
has the
Picard.
Most impactful Ugh. Line of the episode. And
she's
it's
not-
just two words. Jean-Luc.
Jean-Luc.
There he is. I've got him. Like, I've got, there he is.
It's so hopeful.
Oh,
it's really
man.
Heartbreaking. Like, I can't think about it too much. I'll start crying.
Jean-Luc.
They
that
just,
is,
they have this beautiful history.
Oh.
And she's only she's there for like that line. She's not in this episode until the away team time.
Well, and she's just there for medical attention.
Yeah.
Like Picard's going to need me.
Somebody.
Possibly immediately.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great group to go.
Oh,
the only one that would have been better is if Deanna went too. And she's just like totally overwhelmed from the collective.
Yeah, just senses
him. She's trying
him.
To sense him,
yeah.
You know, and maybe that would have helped it. But
great villain reveal. It like he's the hero and the villain in the same episode. Like, who pulls that off? You can't do that, Star Trek. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's really fun.
He's
though.
The villain. It's so great.
He is the villain. And I think the other thing that they do that's so smart is Riker chooses to fire on him. Like, there's no, there's no
hesitation.
Question.
There's no question.
He is the Borg, you know.
I
can't remember how they resolve this, like, next week. I don't know how this is going to happen, but I'm wondering if the weapon doesn't do what they think it does, or it fires and then they go on this rescue mission, or maybe he like beams over and then they're able to keep him somehow by changing some, they'll attach something to him so that they can't be beamed back out, and then it like a little array or whatever changes a lot. Who knows?
We'll
but we know we
out.
Get Picard back.
We do know that we get Picard. Spoilers, we get Picard back.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to that.
I do love when they return to the ship and how downtrodden they are when they come to the bridge. Like, even Data looks down. Everyone looks miserable.
It's really horrible.
As
oh,
they
Worf.
Come off the turbo lift. And
Worf.
Data's like, he has been altered by the Borg.
He is the Borg. He's
he
like,
is
he,
Borg.
He is Borg. It's like he can smell it on him or something. Ugh, it's awful. And they have no time to really mourn. Like, this is
no
like,
time,
they're in
no.
the middle of, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Borg ship is regenerating. It's going to go back and it's on a, obviously, we know that it's on a course for Earth. The entire fleet is going to meet them at Wolf 359.
Oh, do we see a huge space battle? We know they don't do it like, I mean, are we going to see a huge space battle?
We know that the Borg are heading to Wolf 359 and we know that the Enterprise cannot go back to warp, cannot maintain that power and use the deflector dish at the same time. This is your one opportunity to blow it up. There are so many lines in this that are just rent-free in my head. Lacutus's speech isn't a long one. I am Lacutus of Borg. Your life, as it has been, is over. From this time forward, you will service us. That is the speech, and it is so fucking good. Every word is like just meticulously reordered. Like, there's just, there's a weird cadence to to it. The commas are just in weird places. Like, it's like he's relearning English. I don't know. I love the delivery of the locutus line. Mm-hmm. And then Riker's really simple response. Mr. Worf, fire. And the way the camera pans around Riker to zoom in on his face. Like, there's just camera angles we don't see in any other episode as well. They always do such basic camera angles. But this, it's like the camera is lined up with the music, with the dialogue all at once. Jonathan Frakes, here's your big moment. Puff chest out. Fire. My one note, Danae.
Go on.
Is forever and always, I wish, if there was one change I would make to this episode, silent credits.
Oh.
And if this episode comes out today, I guarantee you it has silent credits. Because the final score of
yeah, it's very like exciting. So jarring. Yeah.
For all time, the end credits, as much as I love the theme song, kills this moment. It tramples all over the final score and Riker saying fire. It needs, I want to watch this episode with the silent credits at the end, because I think you have people in tears, because it's never been done in Star Trek before. I think like it, the first time I remember this working really well was 24. A character, you, whenever a character dies in 24, it doesn't do the TikTok. So you knew it wasn't a fake out. You knew that that person is dead because they killed the end TikTok music.
Well, do you remember when they came out with the Bourne movies, and they changed the fight scenes to silence and just sounds of people getting smacked around, and how unnerving that was.
Pencils
just
like, getting inserted everywhere.
It's like, the music covers up a lot of this, and I'm kind of comfortable with that.
It reminds you you're in a movie as
well.
But
the silence is draws you in, like it brings you all to a moment together, and you're just like, when is the silence going to end? And then it's a commercial break for Fruity Pebbles. And so then you can like leave a moment. But when there is music, you're right, it kind of like can change the vibe.
Always takes me out of the scene.
Yeah, 100%.
Pips. Give us some pips. I mean, I could talk about this episode for the next hour, but I know we have things to do.
Yeah, I think this is definitely a four-pipper for me, because it does everything that you want a Star Trek show to do. But with the addition of a really... like the women in this episode are really fun. Shelby, obviously, I've talked about. Yeah. Deanna says something really hard to Riker that is uncomfortable, but she knows it needs to be said, and it is the correct thing to say.
Your place is on the bridge. It would not be, it would not be appropriate for you to lead the away team? She says something like that. But I love that he is surrounded by women on the bridge.
Yeah.
Put him back in his place.
Yeah. And, you know, then you've got Beverly, who has the idea that ends up really taking things to the next level for how to make the Borg ship slow down for a little while. So that was fun. Guinan is incredible. She's kind of reminding the audience that like, hey, even if all of this ends, even if everybody dies, a part of humanity lives on. And that's kind of how it goes sometimes. And her people were scattered.
She knows firsthand.
And she knows that you can go on from that. And it's meant to be hopeful, but it's really sad.
Yeah.
She has a really great line in this. I think everybody's lines are really fun, you know, in this one. You've got so much technobabble too. Like this one's all about trying to do new things with new weapons and experiment. And we get to see them being really clever with like what they're capable of doing and permission to think outside of the box for the first time as far as a ship goes. And that's really fun to watch and to listen to. Oh,
Geordi's
my God.
So fun.
We didn't even talk about Geordi doing his Geordi dive.
Geordi roll.
Not only did we see a Geordi roll in this episode, which, hello, he had so much room. He didn't need a roll, but I loved it.
It's never needed.
Do it every time.
Never needed.
But then we also saw Worf do a little skippy jump to get over to punch a Borg. And that was really cute, too. I kind of loved it.
He just does a little, just over the bottom bit. The phaser works. The phaser works at range, Worf. You had the high ground. You came lower to shoot that Borg. There's no need for that. No. You didn't even put yourself between you and the captain.
He's like, ping! You know, ping. I love that.
But I loved the little hop.
We got to see Poker Game in this episode as well. So we got to see Wesley, and he was very helpful, by the way, of giving information, I will say. He's a terrible poker player, but that's okay.
Terrible.
But yeah, this is a great episode. It has just about, we saw a Borg battle, we saw a Nebula, we saw the captain be completely assimilated. We saw Riker have to take a position of power and authority, and we believe that it was a struggle, but also we believe he can do it. And where we as an audience, it's so crazy to unite an audience going, okay, Riker, you're gonna take this and you're gonna save everything. And everyone's like, we can get in there and save him. And he's like, fire. And we're like, whoa, wait, no, whoa, no. Whoa, we didn't want you to be that kind of
leader. Because that's not the Star Trek answer either. Kirk wouldn't do that. Kirk would risk everything.
Well, yeah,
he would risk humanity to rescue Bones.
I think, what would
Riker's
Picard do?
Making the right choice. Picard kills Riker. He's already dead. He kills him in the chair. Like, he beams a batlift over. What he does, actually, he beams Worf over there with a batlift and says, don't come back until Riker is dead, including if you die with him. Like, yeah. It's the right choice every day of the
week. It's wild, but it's just a fun episode because it subverts a lot of what you're used to seeing in Trek, including having the strong female lead.
Yeah. Like, I love it.
Like,
it's
Shelby
so
is Strange New Worlds level.
Yes.
As far as a new modern writing is for a woman character. And I'm genuinely relieved to have seen that it existed here.
In 1990. She's incredible. She is the star of a really packed episode. No surprise, this is four pips
from
me.
Yeah.
She holds her own. Like, as an actor, she holds her own. Coming into Star Trek with this 24-year legacy, movies, like, she, like, the actor is doing what Shelby is doing as well. Four pips from me. Geordi role and all, there's no need for it. But if those isolation doors come down, Geordi is prepped to roll under them. Like, I will roll under them matter what.
I love it so much.
Comes up again in Generations.
Let's go.
There's no need for it. It's incredible.
No, there is a need for it. It just needs to be every time how you exit the warp core area.
It's not just, I'm going on a lunch break. Geordi, you're not going to, I'm rolling.
Whee! It's like the Riker maneuver.
Yes. The
but it's the Geordi
maneuver.
No,
it is the Geordi maneuver.
It's the Geordi maneuver.
It is. I love it so much. We didn't even bring up one of my favorite lines, which is Riker saying, I don't want my crew battling the Borg at the same time they're battling their own fatigue. Something I've actually used in retail, but not with the Borg. I changed it all, and they're just like, oh, that was a sharp line. I'm like, yep. It helps being the only Star Trek nerd in the ship, on the crew, shit, in the shop. That's what I meant. In the shop.
Get to the bridge.
Yep.
I mean the brig. I mean, take a break.
You're fired. Phaser fired.
What?
Mr. Worf? Incredible episode. I am so excited to see how it concludes. We will do some predictions about how you think it's going to conclude at the top of next week's episode. Gushy. I'm ready to continue talking for hours and hours and hours. I don't think this will be the last time we visit the best of both worlds. Ambassador, hey, if people want to reach out and talk to us and tell us how amazing we are, how would they do that?
Not through our regular email, because I still haven't figured out how to fix it. So sorry about that. You'll need to email us at our email, which is...
You know what you can do? You can go to iananddanae@gmail.com. That's iananddanae@gmail.com.
Yeah. So you can email us there. Sorry again about the weirdness about our emails, but we do like to get your emails and your thoughts. We're going to be doing obviously part two next time. So if you've got something that you have behind the scenes, you can send them ahead of time, or you can try to join us in the live chat. We go live on Fridays usually, and we usually go live around 5 p.m. Central. That does change because, you know, life. So you can find out all those informations and details at our Discord, where we update our event details as frequently as we need to. But if you're in the live chat, you also get to influence the show. So thanks again to everybody who was able to make it live to the show and show us some really interesting behind the scenes facts that we covered on today's episode.
Yes, it was glorious. All of those links and descriptions and things will be in the description and things in the show notes for the episode. Well, Ambassador, until next week, no surprise, the episode will be Best of Both Worlds Part 2, Season 4, Episode 1. I'm Captain Ian, and we have engaged the Borg from me.
And I am Ambassador Danae, and we want to slow anybody down. Just a reminder to sting them in a tender spot, because they might stop to scratch.
Live long and prosper.
Thanks thanks for listening to this episode of Captain's Pod. If you'd like to get in touch with the podcast, you can send us an email to ian@ianandene.com. And if you want to support the show and get the episodes early, you can go to our Patreon. That's patreon.com/ianandene. If you want to catch the show live, we have those links down in the description for YouTube and Twitch. And then I think I'm supposed to close this hailing frequency, so bloop bloop, we're out.
Oh, my light is... Oh, fuck. My light's falling down.
Oh, fuck. My light's falling down.
That's not the song I was...
La, 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 la. Are you recording?
Yep.
So, can I ask you a question?
Oh, please, yeah.
How frustrating is it to edit our podcast these days? oh, boy.
No, it's no more frustrating than usual. It's not more or less frustrating.
How was your neck? Because when you said, it went like entirely snapped to the to the right.
Well, before we get into it, I feel like I actually stamped on your intro and I was really happy with it. Can I do your intro even though we've already introed? I'm your captain, Ian Whittington, and to learn about her is frankly provocative, but she's next of kin to chaos. It's Ambassador Danae. It's the perfect intro for you.
That you forgot?
That I didn't forget. I got so excited to just do the best of both worlds that you're like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to mess with my format. But I also didn't want to lose that perfect line. I'm assuming like when you become a doctor, you buy a car.
I guess that, I mean, I would.
I think that's what I would do.
If I had the fortitude to go for a doctorate.
Yeah, right. I would love, what would you be a doctor of?
Oh shit.
You'd be a doctor of anything.
What the fuckery?
Already done.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't even think you have to go to school for that because that's part of the doctorate.
Yes, exactly.
What would I become? I think I would be like in education. I think I would become a doctor like in that field of education somehow.
What about like a masseuse doctor?
A doctor of medicine?
Yeah.
That like specializes in massage therapy?
Massage therapy, yeah.
And if, for the record, I'm not a masseuse. I am a massage therapist.
I am a licensed massage therapist. I keep doing that. Yes, I am sorry.
It's okay. It's a very common thing. And I'll just keep correcting because I just want to make sure that y'all know I am in my lane.
I make that mistake on behalf of everybody so that you can correct it. Everything I know about masseusing comes from Phoebe Buffay in Friends.
Yeah. Well,
everything.
It's just the terminology. And I say that for my own self. Which is why we do not call a massage table a bed. It is not a bed.
That's an important... Yeah. I can see that clarification being important.
So when I went to a Thai massage in England, I was expecting... Okay, so here's the real tea. I was looking around at all the different massage therapists because there's quite a few. And I wanted to like experience a massage while I was in England. And like, who doesn't? Especially as a massage therapist, I love getting work from other professionals because I learn something new. I was walked upon. I was chiropracted without my permission. I'm pretty sure a finger went in my ear at one point in time, but
you're
I kind of blacked
no,
out.
No, it did not.
It was a lot. But when she was like on me with her feet and her little toes just digging in, I was like, this is not how Thai massages are back home at all. Back home, you are fully clothed and you're on a mat on the floor and they're essentially just helping you to stretch and move your body and really just kind of elongate. But that's not what I experienced. It was interesting.
I didn't know where that was going. And the thing, I literally dropped her off and picked her up from this massage. So I was like, you did not tell me about the finger.
All massage therapists are different with different levels. Ian and I went to a couple's massage once. And they slapped him on the butt. Now, it's called tapotement. It is a form of massage where they just tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick, like they use their hands. You can cup your hands and it kind of gives like a little bit of like suction. Anyways, all I hear is tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-slap-slap-slap-slap-slap-slap-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick.
And it suddenly gets really tense. I was like, wait, did he just tense his butt?
So anyway, I didn't know that they were going to do that. So, you know, you're always in for it. But
they peeled back the coverings of my bottom.
Yes.
And then it went, and I was like, not expected.
He had never had a massage before. I told him that it was going to be, it was fine.
They went below the belt.
Do you derobe? He asked me. I was like, yeah. I mean, like, I am here for the work. And he's like, okay, I guess I will too. And so it was very uncomfortable. It was amazing. Some of my clients always wear clothes on the massage table. And I am talking about their shoes, their socks, their jeans, their belt, two layers of shirts, and a coat. They had been gifted a massage. They never had one before. I sat down with them for a while and kind of explained what to expect. I said, you know, stay clothed to your comfortability. And I left the room.
And they put more layers on?
I go back in and they're on top of the bed, on top of all the sheets and stuff, just laying stiff as a board. I was like, oh, this person might not enjoy being touched. And so I just worked around what I could and I gave them a massage the best I could through all the layers of clothing.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was really, really interesting. Can I show you what I just reached for? No? Okay.
Yes. No, you can. Oh, okay. What did you reach for?
Just this old banana.
You were going to hand me an old banana. That looks more like the DERPA prize than the DERPA prize does. That's really old, Danae. That's gone hard.
I know.
That's stiff as a board. Yeah. What is this?
I mean, you could tell when I held it up and it just fell.
I don't want that.
Reese's, what are you doing?
Is he eating someone? Oh, he's eating the banana peel.
Where did he get the banana peel?
I threw it away.
You threw it across the room?
I threw it across the room.
He's eating the banana peel.
He's going to shit everywhere.
Buddy, leave it alone, man.
How much has he eaten?
A portion of it already.
This is amazing. Live animal story. God. This is it. It's finally happened. We have an animal story.
I look over and he's just like, just tearing at something like jerky, like something that is really giving him resistance because it's so hard.
Yeah.
And I just go over and look at it and it's a very flat, sad, scary, black looking sort of like monstrosity. And I get closer.
He's our dog.
And I do want to tell you, did you see what my final notes were?
No.
It was Mr. Worf. Worf is wild-eyed. Deanna is wild-eyed. Riker, Mr. Worf, fire. And I say, yes, kill him, Riker. Kill your captain. Fucking hell.
You bastard. Captain's Pod, Stardate 21, 25.
Could you not do it so loud, though? Because you keep writing. Okay, let me cover my mic. Okay, go ahead. Try again. I'll come covering my microphone.
Captain's Pod, Stardate
21, 25.4.
Welcome aboard the Starship. Captain's Pod, Stardate 21.
Ow, that made you know what that did? That made my lips like vibrate and then
tickle.
Oh
yeah, that feels weird, doesn't
it? Or you just want to like grab them and pull them off of your face.
Yeah, that's the universe telling you to shut the fuck up and let me do my intro.
Oh, okay.